I'm talking to Ian Mackay, and he has spent some time in Liberia, part of the outreach from Samaritan's Purse. Thanks so much for being here today, Ian.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So when were you in Liberia?
I took off to Monrovia from Vancouver the second week of July is when I arrived in the capital.
Okay. And what was your plan for being there?
I was sent over as part of the Samaritan's Purse DART team, specifically to work in the Ebola centers responding to the outbreak.
And wow, I mean, you're leaving someplace so nice and clean with no Ebola, and then you get off the plane and you're in a totally different world. What was that like?
Yeah, we were pretty well thrown into it, and for a lot of us out there working in the response, it wasn't our first disaster. A lot of us had worked together on previous trips, so we all knew each other, whether that be in Haiti after the earthquake, during the cholera outbreak. A lot of us had been together on that disease. Another one, Philippines last year after the typhoon. A few of us had worked together in that disaster, so we weren't strangers to each other. And so because of that, we were able to form, you know, very effective, hardworking team. We all knew each other's strengths and weaknesses, and because of that, it definitely made things a lot easier on everybody. So yeah, we sort of hit the ground running when we went. I'll admit I was a bit ignorant in departing there. I was pretty gung ho when they gave me the opportunity to go, and then not until everything was confirmed and they sent me a 200-page document outlining the Ebola virus did things really hit home for me. And then soon after arriving, when both my colleagues, Kent Brantley and Nancy Reitbull, contracted the virus, that's when things really got crazy for us.
Were you working side by side with them?
Yes, I was at the beginning, but like I said, within a week of me being there, both of them tested positive with the virus and were isolated in their houses. But yes, no, they were workers of mine.
Okay. Wow. So how did you guard against any fear when you were going through that?
I guess you could say I didn't. I mean, there was a lot of fear going through the organization there, and a lot of anxiety because we'd worked so, these weren't just another patient in the Ebola Center for us. These were our friends that we looked after. At that point, we really weren't sure where the break in the system was, you know, where they'd somehow been exposed to this virus and contracted it. We were, you know, swearing by MSF or Doctors Without Borders protocol. And up until this outbreak, they'd been one of the only organizations who treated Ebola patients, and they'd never had a staff member contract the virus. So we trusted them with everything, and we were very diligent in our protective equipment that we were wearing inside the centers, our decontamination. And so, yeah, when Kent and Nancy both contracted the virus, there was a lot of fear and not knowing, you know, where did they get this? Were we exposed to it? You know, had we somehow got the virus in our system and it was just lying dormant and waiting to show itself? We were really unsure at that point. And there was a lot of fear and a lot of anxiety. And I think I can speak on behalf of a lot of my coworkers that were out there at the time, and some of them who still are out there working. The night we found out Kent Brantley was positive with the Ebola virus, I think a lot of us left that room all with at least one symptom of Ebola.
Yeah, I'm sure you can kind of make it up if you're thinking you might have it.
Yeah, there was a lot going through our heads at that point. We were very fatigued as well. We'd been working very long, draining days inside the clinic, and just felt very alone a lot of the time as well. We were two organizations trying to look after the majority of the patient care for West Africa. So certainly for specifically working in Liberia. So we were very drained, and then working inside those protective suits inside the wards multiple times a day, the dehydration really takes its toll on you, the lack of sleep, just, you know, not eating properly. We were, you know, a lot of us were in rough shape, but we were hiding it quite well. And, you know, we were we were trooping out, and we were staying true to our faith, and we were, you know, we knew that we were there for a reason. Number one, you know, being to serve God. Number two, being there to provide care to the victims of the Ebola outbreak.
Yeah. So you're talking about Kent Bradley. Am I right?
Kent Bradley, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I just wanted to make sure I had it right. And then you talked about Nancy. Now, both of them were flown back to the States for treatment, right?
Yes, they were.
Okay. And have you seen either one of them since?
Unfortunately, I haven't. Okay. A lot of the members from the Ebola team that looked after them have had the opportunity, and it's really, from what I've heard from a lot of them, brought somewhat closure to the whole experience, because of course it was quite traumatizing to a lot of us involved who were there when they contracted the virus. So I haven't personally been able to maintain much contact with them, but I know one day I will be able to see them again, and it will be a very good day.
Wow. You know, I knew you were there. I knew you were working with Ebola victims and helping them with, you know, the care, and, you know, you're hoping for recovery. I had no idea you worked so closely with them. So, you know, with Kent Brown and then with Nancy, mm-hmm. you know, I just had no idea you were right there, part of the team, the same team.
Yeah, we were a pretty skeleton team at that point as well. You know, a lot of us on the Samaritan's Purse Disaster Assistance Response Team, we live normal lives back home in North America or, you know, Europe, wherever a lot of us came from, you know, all points of the world. And we have normal lives back home. A lot of the doctors have practices, the nurses have jobs, you know, there's families, there's husbands, there's wives, there's children involved. So a lot of us were, you know, taking time to volunteer out of our, you know, day-to-day life to go over there and serve. So as much as, you know, we needed people to stay, you know, people did have to, you know, get back to their normal lives. And so we were running, you know, a very minimal team at the time, but we knew there was a job to be done, and we just sort of, you know, put our head to the grindstone and did what we had to do to get them out alive. I mean, it was there were some very close calls. Kent was, and Nancy were both very, you know, well into the virus before we were able to evacuate them. Of course, at the time that Kent contracted the virus, he was the first Ebola patient that had ever been flown. Mm-hmm. They've been transported before, so there were a lot of question marks in the process and in the evacuation process and how to get them out. And, you know, thankfully, we did, you know, evacuation plan did come together. Samaritan's Purse headquarters worked around the clock trying to get us out safely and get Kent and Nancy out safely. And, you know, thank God they did. And, you know, thanks to the hardworking individuals back, not the tip of the spear on the front lines, but, you know, the handle of the spear back in North America. Thankfully, both of them were able to get out alive.
Wow, that is just amazing. So let's talk a little bit about Samaritan's Purse and what they do in Liberia. They've been there for 13 years?
Yes, Samaritan's Purse has been working in Liberia for 13 years.
Okay. And can you tell me more about the staff that's there, the kind of things that they do as far as Ebola is concerned and the caretaking of patients?
I mean, Samaritan's Purse, you know, Ebola came to us. You know, there was, and for example, like Kent Brantley, he was there, you know, running out the Elwha, helping, you know, out the Elwha Hospital. So he didn't go over there to treat Ebola. Ebola came to him. So Samaritan's Purse really was sort of thrown into the game there with very little time to prepare. And, you know, he was one of, Samaritan's Purse was one of very few organizations that was willing to take on that task of, you know, setting up isolation wards and caring for Ebola patients. They've been involved. You know, I can't even tell you how many different things, you know, they're involved. They're just so highly respected in that country, and you sense that just, you know, driving around an SP vehicle with SP deck on the side. People, Samaritan's Purse does have a very good reputation in that country. They have over 350 staff in a variety of relief development projects, and of course, Ebola really did take priority at that point. But, you know, when expats were, you know, coming home, recover, you know, when the Ebola fighters were having to head back home, you know, there was a lot of staff, SP, Liberian staff, you know, on the ground continuing the fight and who still, you know, remain there today. Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's fascinating. So Samaritan's Purse's main focus in fighting Ebola in Liberia is through education and household-based care. And there are helicopters that are in use to get into isolated areas, train and equip family members. And now, can you tell me about these home care kits?
Yeah, I mean, Samaritan's Purse originally, when I was out there, you know, we were providing direct care to Ebola-positive individuals. We were, you know, providing hands-on care, building Ebola centers and staffing them. Now, when you get into, you know, a highly infectious disease such as Ebola, a lot of it is spread, you know, mainly in the community. And no, there has never been an Ebola outbreak on this scale in the past. So there were a lot of question marks for a lot of people about how to approach this. So, you know, rather than providing this direct approach inside the Ebola centers, you know, Samaritan's Purse staff, you know, all the brains of the organization got together and sort of found that it was more effective to be providing, you know, household-based care and fighting Ebola through education. There are, you know, varying statistics coming out that, you know, an individual in the community who tested positive with the virus in transport to get to an Ebola center could infect, you know, 3 to 5 other individuals in that process. So that's a mass scale. So a lot of the global response was playing catch up throughout the whole outbreak. Mm-hmm. You know, Samaritan's Purse came forward in April, you know, in front of U.S. Congress, Kenny Isaacs, and, you know, warned Congress of the potential for, you know, a global health crisis. And unfortunately, those warnings were more or less ignored. And then, you know, we found ourselves a few months later, you know, in a global health crisis. And, you know, the global response was slow to respond, but, you know, a lot of countries finally did step up, but it was too late. And so we found, you know, the global response was just playing catch up the whole time. And, you know, you can't build enough Ebola beds for how many patients we had. You know, you talk about, I know the numbers are growing out of control, you know, daily, but, you know, up to 20,000 Ebola infections. I mean, building 20,000 Ebola beds in isolation unit is a lot of resources and a lot of money. And so Samaritan's Purse took regrouped after Kent and Nancy tested positive and sort of went back in with a different mindset of, you know, educating the locals and the communities and providing home care kits that contain, you know, basic equipment for a family member to be able to care for, you know, a mother, a daughter, a son, you know, a father. So the home care kits contain, you know, things like a raincoat, rubber boots, mask, gloves, all reusable. After being soaked with chlorine, and, you know, basic medications, disinfectant supplies, infection control supplies such as soap, industrial strength gloves, and chlorine. So, you know, fairly basic kits, but are effective enough if used properly to contain any Ebola patient inside their home and provide care from family and have family members provide care to these patients to give them the, you know, the greatest chance at beating the virus. So, I mean, it's definitely a different approach than we had before, but I would definitely say it's the most effective approach. Education is key. You know, we're dealing with different environments here compared to, you know, what we're used to here in North America. There's a lot of different traditional beliefs that go along with the cultures in West Africa, mainly being burial beliefs and whatnot. They don't have the healthcare system. We have their healthcare systems in shambles because of, you know, the civil wars that have been going on over there. So there was just a lot of education that needed to be done, and Samaritan's Purse stepped up with that, and, you know, is running community care centers and overseeing them throughout the country And it has shown, well, if you look at statistics, you know, the numbers in Liberia are going down, and that's now turned, that's because of, you know, this response, the global, you know, response has finally come into play with different organizations taking on different tasks, because, you know, different organizations running, you know, providing the direct patient care inside the Ebola centers and leaving Samaritan's Purse to be able to go out to these remote communities and having just the huge logistical capacity to respond on such a massive scale. And mm-hmm. just things like having helicopters, that just puts us so far above other organizations and how valuable we can be in getting into these very remote areas that are so isolated and being able to provide this education. I've talked to people that have scrutinized for, you know, this helicopters aren't cheap, but they're so necessary. For an effective response in those remote areas.
Well, I see here that Samaritan's Purse has provided Ebola preventative education to 1.5 million Liberians, provided prevention and control kits to 8,200. The Canadian government recently gave Samaritan's Purse Canada $2.6 million to continue and expand the work in Liberia. But the estimation of what is needed here in the next while is $5 million. Can you go over what is all involved in that $5
million? You know, it's exactly, you know, what Samaritan's Purse has been doing so far. A lot of it is coming down to, you know, providing those prevention and control kits and being able to effectively, you know, pay staff to the Liberian, you know, SP staff and giving the locals jobs so they can be able to go out to these areas and provide education. I mean, yes, you know, 1.5 million Liberians, that sounds like a lot, but there's still a lot more to go. You know, 8,200 kits sounds like a lot, but you know, it's just a drop in a puddle in such a vast country like Liberia. Samaritan's Purse has just been so capable with their resources to be able to respond on such a huge scale. But you know, it's a never-ending process. We see Ebola, you know, if it was front page for so long, and then now it's sort of slowly phased off, and now you don't really hear about it much anymore. You mentioned Ebola, it's like, oh yeah, what went on with that? Samaritan's Purse, even though, you know, we're not in the spotlight anymore. You know, we're not front page CNN like we were in August, but, you know, we're still in the trenches and we're still, you know, out there. You know, we got, I have numerous friends that, you know, came back scarred, you know, and, you know, recovered and have gone back, and are still, you know, to this day on the front lines fighting. And so, you know, we don't see it in the news, but they're still just continually expanding and reaching out to as many people as possible. And, you know, the Canadian government did step up and provided some serious funding for us. But, yeah, I know there's a lot more funding needed for this response. And, you know, unfortunately, that does lie on private donors. But just to be able to see those numbers that, you know, the amount of people Samaritan's Purse has been able to reach so far, you know, should hopefully provide some encouragement to, you know, the potential of growth of what's, you know, if we've been able to do, to be able to provide this, these sort of numbers with the funding we've had so far, imagine what we can do, you know, with continued donors.
Mm-hmm. Now, for more information, including how to become a financial partner, you can go to the website, samaritanspurse.ca/Beth. That's samaritanspurse.ca/BETH. So you help to provide essential help for staff to stop Ebola flare-ups as they occur, too. Can you kind of explain how that works and how a community can also recover after the virus has been contained?
I mean, as far as the flare-ups, it's being able to, Samaritan's Purse has such a huge network within a church community, so they're really able to reach out to a lot of these areas, and there's, you know, a big communication network. So when Samaritan's Purse does find, you know, a potential Ebola patient, we're able to get in there with helicopters and, you know, because of hopefully, you know, the education that we were able to get into these areas and, you know, provide education to the community health workers, you know, they're able to isolate those patients in their household immediately and immediately start providing care with these home health kits to prevent the spread. You know, all it takes is one you know, complacent, uneducated individual to, you know, ignore those symptoms and, you know, continue to be out in the community and, you know, coming into contact with people. And it spreads that easy. And that's what we've seen in these communities of, you know, it goes from one and it just blows up. And, you know, in previous outbreaks, that's what's happened. And then slowly it dies off. And, you know, villages die off, unfortunately. And, you know, we're really trying to prevent that. And so by using, you know, by using the resources, the education, the home health kit, that's where it really comes together to prevent large flare-ups in these communities.
Wow, that's just fascinating to hear about what it's like there. If you could be back there right now, would you?
Oh, in a heartbeat. You know, if you ask any of us that were out there or who'd be in there, you know, ask any aid worker, you know, if we'd go back, I'm pretty sure, you know, I'd put my money that we'd all say yes. This is it's who we are. You know, we're there for Samaritan's Purse is there for two reasons. You know, number one, we're there to serve God. Number two, we're there, you know, to serve the people of Liberia, you know, and spread the gospel throughout. So it's, it was tough. I mean, Samaritan's Purse, with, you know, working with them in Liberia with Ebola, it was by far the toughest thing I've ever done. And I've worked in some pretty gnarly areas in Eastern Congo, right on, you know, right on the South Sudan border, like I said, earthquakes, cholera, typhoons. You know, I've been down and dirty in disasters, and this is Ebola is unlike anything you will ever see, and it is absolutely devastating to see what it does to families, individuals, and communities. You know, it tears people of all dignity. You know, we have kids, families dying, and you know, kids left to fend for themselves at very young ages. It really is heart wrenching and very tough. And you know, I'd be out there. You know, when I'm asked, I'll be out there as soon as I can. That's just part of the recovery process for us as well. Mm-hmm. You know, we were hit hard when our colleagues tested positive with the virus, and it really took a lot out of all of us. And I think, you know, for a lot of us, getting through this grieving process, you know, one of the only ways is to head back there and see this virus contained.
Yeah. So thanks to the federal government's help, the goal is now at the halfway point. But we need generous Canadians to partner with Samaritan's Purse and make sure every Liberian who needs help is receiving it. For more information, you can go to the website samaritanspurse.ca/Beth. That's samaritanspurse.ca/Beth. Ian, what are your thoughts? What is misunderstood about Ebola here back home?
You know, with Ebola back home, it's, you know, it's frustrating. It really is. But you really gotta break it down to, you know, I'm not, a lot of us who are in these areas, we don't think like your average individual. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when I hear things like, you know, I'm based out of Vancouver, and, you know, we had a nurse come back from Sierra Leone, and you know, she's in isolation, and, you know, there was possibly Ebola patient there, but, you know, it was just, you know, someone who came home and was exhausted, and thought, you know, had a fever. She was scared. She went to the hospital, and, you know, there was all sorts of fear and panic spread throughout, and it turns out, you know, she's negative. So we really got to look at numbers here of, you know, in the States, yes, no, we have had, you know, positive Ebola cases on American soil. But we've learned from these cases. You know, it is a learning process. We've never seen a virus like this before. But rest assured that, you know, us back home here, we have the education behind us, and we have the health care. You know, we have the resources we need to kick this virus. If it was, you know, to make landfall, you know, we haven't had a positive Ebola patient in Canada yet, not to say we're not going to. You know, we do need to step up. We need to continue sending healthcare staff, and healthcare staff should not be punished coming home. I mean, it was very tough coming home from this outbreak, and the stigma that goes along with the virus. You know, your own, you know, family members, you know, afraid to be around you. You know, your own family afraid to hug you at the airport. It was tough. You know, knowing we slave away in these clinics day after day, and you know, we just come home absolutely exhausted and wrecked, and you know, are isolated. Yeah. You know, from our families and from our friends. So, there's just a lot of irrational fear going on in the communities. We need to send healthcare staff over, and we need to look after them when they come home, and you know, make sure we're providing, you know, fair treatment to them. It's not as easy to contract as you think. And if we look at the numbers of, you know, the people who have tested positive on Ebola on the American soil, how many people they've spread it to? I mean, the exception of those two nurses who are in direct contact with a positive Ebola patient's, you know, bodily fluids, no one else has tested positive for the virus. Mm-hmm. So there's just a lot of irrational fear going on. But, you know, if you look, we look at the death toll and the mortality rates in Liberia. If you look at the resources and how strapped we were inside these clinics, we were working with an IV pole, you know, and, you know, in our clinical judgment, we didn't have labs, we didn't have blood work, we didn't have dialysis, you know, blood transfusions. We could not do things on such a scale we could here. So yeah. Rest assured, you know, here we do have the resources, we do have the ability to fight it. And you know what? Now we have survivors and we have antibodies to be able to help kick the virus.
Yeah, yeah. So would you say there is hope?
Definitely. Good. 100%.
Good.
You know, I'm rest assured in Canada knowing, you know, we have very, very low risk for, you know, an Ebola outbreak. Not to say, like I said, an Ebola patient isn't going to, you know, hit our soil. It might. But you know what? We have to support them in this as well. Because survivors play a crucial role in not only raising awareness to this virus, but being able to help. You know, now you are such a valuable tool of providing immunity. If you look at, you know, American survivors have now, you know, Dr. Rick Sacra, who tested positive, who I worked with out in Liberia, he's now going back onto the front lines because he's such a valuable tool that he has immunity to this virus. And you see Ebola survivors coming out of these Ebola centers and going back in a few weeks later to care for the kids who've lost their parents. I mean, we really need to be working with these survivors and supporting the staff and individual who are on the front lines working.
Mm. Yeah, that is so important. Wow.
You know, and that said, for Samaritan's Purse and, you know, the dozens of other organizations that have finally stepped up, you know, they're, you know, for a while we were, you know, one of the few on the front lines, but there's been so many other organizations that have stepped up in the response. And I mean, there's no way, you know, other than forward from here for us.
Oh, good. I'm so glad that you put your life on hold to go help those people, and I hope that it goes way beyond satisfaction for you, but that you really felt you were there at the place you were supposed to be, that God intended for you to be at that time.
You know, we all had a calling to be there, and we're all there for the same reason. And mm-hmm. you know, you talk to the people who were there, you know, who Kent's now survived, and you know that we had one night when he almost didn't. You know, we thought Kent was dying. We thought he was dying in front of our eyes. There was a few healthcare workers with him that night, and I remember talking with Dr. Lance Plyler, the head medical director for the response in Liberia at the time. You know, I remember asking him in our debrief, you know what saved Kent's life, and because you know he got convalescent blood from a survivor. He got the ZMAP antibodies, and he asked Lance. I remember he looked me in the eye and said, "Prayers and antibodies," in that exact order.
Yeah. Wow, that is so true. Wow, I sure do appreciate your time today, Ian. Thank you so much.
No worries. Thank you, Beth.
For more information, including how you can partner with Samaritan's Purse, visit this website at samaritanspurse.ca/Beth. That's samaritanspurse.ca/BETH.